Thanks for joining A&M Conversation With, a podcast series featuring Alvarez and Marsal leaders discussing the trends impacting businesses today.
In this episode of A&M Conversation With, David Gruber, a managing director with our healthcare industry group, sits down with managing director John Cox in our public and social sector group to discuss the Senate's healthcare reform proposal and address the substance abuse epidemic resulting in 59 to 65,000 overdose deaths in 2016 alone.
Thank you, John, for joining us. Today, we will be discussing the topic of our latest publication, Substance Abuse, A Crisis in Need of Disruption. But before that, I thought we'd spend a couple of minutes on the latest activity in the Senate. John, what are your thoughts on the Senate healthcare reform proposal, ironically titled the Better Care Reconciliation Act of 2017?
Thanks, David, for having me this afternoon. I think the short answer is there isn't a lot of difference between the Senate proposal, which, as the audience knows, has not been voted on, and the AHCA, which is passed by the House. It replaces the health care, repeals the health care mandates, retains the popular provisions of ACA. Under 26, your children can stay on your policy, keeps pre-existing conditions allowed to be covered. Both bills allow for high-risk pools. Both bills allow for per capita spending on Medicaid. The only significant difference, which I think is important for our topic today, is the House included $2 billion for opioid abuse, and the Senate, as it's currently structured, includes $45 billion.
Why the big difference?
I think the simple answer is, A, people are realizing it's a large crisis and funding needs to increase, and B, just to be blunt, they're using it to get moderates and or conservatives on board. So if you're a moderate and you feel like there's not enough funding either for Medicaid or for the opioid crisis, this is one way, by increasing that, that the Senate Majority Leader hopes to get your vote.
So both the Senate and the House bill were speaking about a reduction in Medicaid expenditures of $7 to $850 billion. And the expectation is there would be cutbacks in that regard. What is the adequacy of the $45 billion given the likely cutbacks on Medicaid and given the large role that the federal government has in supporting programs for substance abuse disorders?
I think the short answer to your question is $45 billion is probably not nearly enough, because remember, the $45 billion is over 10 years. There's a federal agency, part of HHS, called the Substance Abuse and Mental Health Administration, or SAMHSA for short. SAMHSA, in the latest data, tells us that there are about 21, 22 million people addicted to some type of substance abuse. Of that, 4.5 million are illicit drug users, and 2.6 million of that number, of the 22 million, are both alcohol addicted as well as illicit drugs. So it's a big problem. And even though that number has been flat for a number of years, the social cost of that substance abuse is increasing at a rapid rate. Let me give you some additional SAMHSA data to our listeners. In 2014, they came out with a report that said about $31 billion is being spent annually. So in context of the $45 billion over 10 years, $31 billion is spent annually on substance abuse. But more importantly, $120 billion is the estimate for lost productivity. $61 billion is the estimate of crime costs, imprisonment, incarceration. And other healthcare costs is another $12 billion. So the social and actual hidden cost, if you will, of substance abuse in the SAMHSA estimate was $193 billion. So I think that gives our listeners some context as to whether or not the $45 billion is sufficient.
Relative to a current direct spend of $31 billion, also recognizing that only 10 to 20% of those who potentially need treatment obtain treatment for a variety of reasons, including inability to pay the cost.
That's correct.
So what is it going to be to wake the federal government and the state to wake up? I mean, in comparison, you know, when we look at the number of AIDS deaths, it's about 50,000. When you look at the peak automobile deaths, we're looking at 55,000 per annum. And the forecast coming out for 2016 is we're looking at roughly 60 to 65,000 deaths. So in essence, the number of deaths from substance abuse has exceeded AIDS as well as automobile deaths at its peak. Why aren't there more people jumping up and down? Why aren't people taking this more seriously?
I think people will begin to take it more seriously as it has direct impacts on them. I was having dinner with some good friends this weekend, and they mentioned that they knew two families in the last year that had lost children due to drug abuse and substance abuse. So I think as it begins to hit home, and also I think for legislators, either at the state level or at the federal level, as they begin to see these increased costs of treatment, which many Medicaid offices are at the state level, and also the increased cost of incarceration, which is primarily a state and local effort. There are some federal dollars there, but it's primarily a state and local effort. That will begin to focus them on this attention. The other thing that the report that you mentioned early in this podcast, I think it brings out of importance, is the National Safety Council is judging states on six factors as it relates to opioid abuse. And I think it would be helpful to just mention those briefly. Number one is mandatory education, meaning if you're a doctor and you're prescribing opioids, a good practice is to have mandatory education before you begin to prescribe those. Secondly is opioid guidelines. Again, in talking about this opioid crisis, they're like, you know, my child goes to the dentist, they have a particular procedure, and they get opioids that are prescribed for 2 weeks when the pain may only last a couple of days. That's what's meant by guidelines, meaning you can perhaps prescribe less medication or even different medication. Number three, no pill mills. There are, unfortunately, doctors, clinics, medical facilities that are just pumping out enormous amounts of prescriptions in this environment. And so I think having specific legislation at the state and or federal level to eliminate those is important. Number four, prescription monitoring. So people that abuse drugs typically will go to multiple doctors. So having some kind of common database where people can monitor the use and prescriptions of these opioids. And finally, the great news, if there is some, in this crisis is the drug naloxone. And you're beginning to see states allow public police officers, EMTs, those kind of individuals have those drugs and carry those on a regular basis. That is something that counteracts the effect of an opioid overdose. So those six, again, as proposed by the National Safety Council, are sort of good practices in terms of how states are dealing with the opioid crisis. Interestingly enough, as your report indicates, only four states meet all six. So out of 50 states, only four, as of the latest reporting, are meeting all six of those. So I think that clearly indicates there's a long way to go. The final thing I'll mention to you is I just literally, as I was preparing today, saw a headline that the Centers for Disease Control reported for the first time a drop of 13% in the prescriptions for painkillers. That's between 2012 and 2015. On the surface, that would seem like very good news. However, the CDC's acting director pointed out that even at those levels and even at the first decrease in those prescriptions since the 1990s, there are three times the number of prescriptions in the United States than there were in 1999. And I think the last sort of headline I would leave with our listeners is even at those reduced levels, so down 13% between 2012 and 2015, that would be enough opioids, according to the CDC, to keep every American medicated around the clock for 3 weeks. So I think that's a very jarring statistic in my mind and indicates that there's a lot of work yet to do to solve this problem.
So, John, I want to thank you for today's discussion. The leave behind is there are funding issues, there are program management issues, there are fraud issues, and most importantly, there are too many Americans dying too young, and there's an opportunity to perhaps change that going forward. So thanks again for your time.
You're welcome.
For our listeners, for more information, visit our homepage at alvarezandmarsal.com and connect with us on LinkedIn at Alvarez and Marsal.